Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Sujan Patel. Today, we're going to talk about how to grow a profitable SaaS company, the importance of doing what I call the purge, and how to focus on being mission critical as an entrepreneur.
Let's go.
This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability. Today, we have Sujan Patel. He is the general manager of Web Profits, which is an international growth marketing agency. He has over 14 years of experience and has worked with Fortune 500 companies and unknown companies to help them grow. Sujan, how's your day, my friend?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. So before we get into the heavy hitting questions, I have to start the podcast off the same way we do every single time, and that is with an icebreaker. So my friend, are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do it.
All right. So imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. Where are you going to eat, and what are you going to order in order to make your day complete?
Oh man, that is where to eat and choosing the food is the hardest decision of my life. Where am I going to go? What am I eat? I'll probably eat this place called Nasha. I live in Austin. It's a kind of hybrid Indian / Mexican restaurant. So I love spicy food. So that's probably where I eat.
Nice. Now, what are you going to order though? You got it.
I'm going to get the chicken tikka enchiladas.
Interesting.
Very, very. I just had it last night. Delicious.
Nice. Did you have the best day ever last night?
No, not the best day ever. I got lit up by mosquitoes. So other than that, it was a great day.
Nice. Not bad. Love it. So without further ado, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you and what is your story?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing digital marketing for 14 years. First generation Indian American. So I came here with my parents came here as a child. My mom kind of taught me how to hustle. She's always like, kind of doing some sort of side business or something or another. And then my dad kind of got me into computers and tech and whatnot. So that's kind of my, like, as a child in college and whatnot, that's like what I was exposed to. So naturally, I didn't want to have a part-time job in college. So I started a online business. It was an e-commerce store. And this was back in 2000, somewhere between 2000 and 2002. And back in the day, you couldn't, like, there's no Shopify, BigCommerce. There's no, like, actual software that can make your life easier. So you had to build and do a lot of things the hard way. And so I ended up, the business ended up being a failure. But out of it, I learned how to do SEO and marketing. And so from that, ended up dropping out of college and just kind of doing consulting on the side. I ended up getting a job and kind of hitting a limit, like, maybe 22 or 23 where I was kind of at the peak of my career as making well into the six figures and managing a team. And I was like, well, like I looked at the roadmap of like what the next 10 years look like. I'm like, this is going to be bad. Like I'm just kind of, I think I'm capped out, especially as a college dropout, like being, you know, rising the ranks to be like a CMO or kind of getting into the executive route of a marketer. I was like maybe I can make more money, but it's going to be a tough uphill battle. So I was like, let's see how I can be an entrepreneur. Let's like maybe like plan out like my entrepreneurial journey. I ended up convincing my day job, to be my first client at Single Grain, which is my first agency. And I was like, well, I have a 1 year contract with these guys. I either have 1 year to do a very, very, have a very, very chill life with this one client, not even having to go in the office, getting paid more than my salary, which was, I don't know how I negotiated that. And or figure out a way to launch a business. So I was like, well, I'm gonna go make it work. And so I did. Ended up building the business into about $3 million annual revenue, 30 employees, getting burned out in 2013, sold it, still runs, and swore off consulting, went back into the employment world, which was a crazy kind of shift. It took me kind of three jobs in the course of a 6 month window to really get my bearings as an employee. Which is kind of weird just to say. My goal was to learn the ins and outs of SaaS and actually be hands-on. We did a lot of consulting, but essentially I was never very, very hands-on. Like I never ran the product. I never like understood the customer support. So I ended up joining one of my clients as the head of marketing when I worked .com, which is a company. Moved from San Francisco to Minnesota, which is like the reverse of what most people want to do in their careers. And I was like, screw this. I'm going to kind of get my MBA in SaaS and get really hands-on in marketing again. And this kind of came from my wife, who was getting her MBA at the time. So I was like, well, she's going to get her MBA. I'm going to go get my MBA, my version of it. And I said, like, give myself 5 years to like go figure out the next journey of my life as an entrepreneur. I knew I was going to do that. It actually took me 6 months to like start doing some side hustles. I ended up building a tool called Mailshake and another one called Nero in the nights and weekends of my day job. Turns out being an entrepreneur is a lot of hard work, and being an employee, you kind of don't have much to do in the evenings. I had like little to no stress, and we were growing and getting all of our stuff done. So I did that and fell back into consulting. I actually realized I love consulting. Helping people was very fulfilling to me. It was just that I did it as a first-time entrepreneur with single grain. I made a lot of mistakes, didn't build enough of a management team. So with Web Profits, we did things the right way. And I joined an agency and started the U.S. business. And have, you know, I'm the larger equity holder in the U.S. business. But essentially, while these SaaS businesses were getting off the ground, I was like, well, I know how to do consulting. I know how to build a marketing team. So we essentially function like an outsourced marketing team. And fast forward kind of 3 years from that, I've got 7 SaaS businesses, which is kind of absurd amount. And, you know, running the agency, and we've got about 15 or so clients, so a whole lot of fun.
Well, congratulations everything that you've accomplished. I'm curious about SaaS, and a lot of the users, or a lot of the people that are, I'm in the SaaS game too, so I say users. What I meant to say was listeners. A lot of the listeners more than likely have some type of SaaS platform that they're building or wanting to create. What is it about SaaS that excites you? And then to that next question is, what are most SaaS companies doing wrong? When it comes to growing their platform?
So what I love about SaaS is that recurring revenue, right? It's a platform. So when you get a customer, you know, they may not be around forever, but there's a time frame that they're around for, and you can build upon it. So you're building a base, and it's almost like you're building wealth, right? You got to save it. You got revenue, you have profit, you're saving it, and everything you do more of is growing that base of profit, essentially, or your cash. Now, it's not the same, but having customers and building upon them is very similar to kind of building wealth. So that's what I love about SaaS. Now, SaaS is a very commoditized space. You know, my cousin Neil Patel has been in this space for like 12, 13 years, building SaaS since like early 2000s. And, you know, since that, and so I've watched him from the sidelines, and I've, you know, we talk all the time and whatnot, but I've watched this from the sidelines, and I got started with my own businesses in 2015. It's getting more and more saturated, and SaaS and features and functionality are more commoditized. So, you know, I think there's lots of articles out there on that, and you'll probably hear, you know, more of this trends going into 2018, 19, 20. So you really have to figure out a way to stand out. So what are people doing wrong? They're talking about their features. They're talking about their solution a lot. They're talking about what the little nitty gritty about what their SaaS business helps people do, when you really should be doing it the other way around, right? So think about if you have kind of an org chart, and this is kind of a part of servant leadership with customers at the top, and being the founder as the very bottom, you have your customers, the people who engage with your customers, you have, you know, the marketing, and then you have the developers, or kind of the platform and maintenance of that platform, so engineers, and then you have your executives and founders at the very bottom. But you look at that way, you put your customers first. And what that means is that you have to not talk about your solution, you have to talk about your problem and how your solution can help the customer solve their problems. And a lot of times, even further than that, like going deeper, a lot of times people talk about the input metrics and not the output. So for example, Mailshake.com, Mailshake is a outbound sales tool. It's a cold email sales prospecting tool. Sure, we can, you know, what we help with is getting people to more productively and easily manage their outbound sales process and like sending emails in bulk and personalizing and all that stuff. So you'll get better open rates, whatever. Like I can list out a slew of features and functionality that will help you do your job. But the customer just wants sales. The customers want more revenue. So I have to tie in how Mailshake can help my customers generate revenue. And it is by us helping input metric one, input metric two, input metric three, not necessarily the other way around. So I think most companies focus too much on like the features. And again, it's commoditized, right? So think about that. And the other part of this is like going into the future, next 3 to 5 years, you have to really focus on building a brand, building a community, building a unique voice, something that can help you stand out from the crowd. Using Mailshake as an example, I joke around about this because we're so late to this game that I joke that we're the last ones to the space. And I just heard a friend of mine, Ian Cleary, is launching a competitor tool. So it's like, we're still not the last ones, but like, how do we stand out from the crowd? We're not going to win on features. Hell no. We're going to lose on features, but there's still things you can win on by like educating your customers, having a voice. And so what we win on, or at least what we think we win on, is simplicity of ease of use. So we do nothing different than our 10 closest competitors. The only thing we do different, two things we do different is, one, it's like a very simple, easy to use product. And I got that from doing 9 months of customer development, reading reviews, testimonials, talking to potential customers or customers of my competitors. And number two is, we're cheap. And you can, you know, like if you look at like Hotjar, they're an all-in-one tool. And why people go to them is, yeah, they do a lot of things, but realistically, they're 1/5 or 1/10 of the price of like Qualaroo or their next closest competitor.
So a lot of the startups that are about to come out, or they're in the process of starting, you mentioned standing out. Is there a point where it's too late? And what type of content has worked really well for you guys that allowed you to kind of separate yourself? You mentioned education. You mentioned a couple of other things as well, but I'd like to hear a little bit more specifics as to like what is actually making you guys stand out and people being like, oh crap, you know what? I've used these guys for a year and they're just not doing enough for me. I need to switch to an organization like Mailshake.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, it's never too late, right? I think tomorrow is always a new day. You can always do something different. Everybody is always starting. Everyone's an underdog in their own kind of way. I'm writing a book called Underdog, so look out for that. Shameless plug. Look out for that in 2 years. It's a very slow process. But yeah, anybody can do this. It's not too late. You just kind of have to start walking, right? One foot next to the other and just keep going. And it'll be, you know, in the beginning, you're going to have to crawl. So talking specifics, right? So look, I knew that I was in 2015, the second year I was at when I worked at Calm. So like 6 months, 9 months into this business or joining this company, I knew I wanted to go launch a marketing tool. And why a marketing tool? My audience is marketers. So like it removes one hurdle, not understanding the customers. So what I actually, before I started building the tool, I started building my own personal brand, really strategically building it out so that marketers knew my name. I became a respected influencer or person in the industry. So I launched with an ebook called 100 Days of Growth, and I didn't really care to make money, even though I charged for it. But I built a 40,000 person email list with it. And I was just like, very, you know, that's a whole nother story. I can go into details, but essentially I launched a big piece of content, an ebook, to build my personal brand. And then I started building the second biggest thing here is, and you can skip number one if you have this, is building relationships with other key players in the space. So, you know, as I was kind of writing and promoting this blog and being, you know, quote unquote, an author, I started building relationship with all the top players in the SaaS space, right? All the way up to like Jason Limkin, right? I talked to the CEOs, and at first I was like, I used whatever angle I could to get my foot in the door. Hey, can I interview you for my book? Can I do this? You know, like what can I like really give them of value? After a while, like I started to know a lot of people, and a lot being like 10, 15 people, you don't need to know that many people, but essentially building those relationships was very, very key. So that was something I personally as a founder did. Now, let's say you don't want to build your personal brand. Well, before we launched Mailshake, so Mailshake came out, it's actually a pivot of the original idea called contentmarketer.io, which is what was started in 2015. But actually the end of last year, so end like December of 2016 is when we launched Mailshake. We made this whole tool. Turns out it wasn't a great content marketing tool, but this one sliver of the tool, the email outreach part, people loved. And so we killed everything else and zoomed in on making that better. And so in 2016, we focused 100% on rebranding, because salespeople use it versus marketers, and building out that functionality. But while we did that, right? So like while my tool is being built, which everything takes time, I started writing content for the blog. A month or two before we launched, we launched this free ebook called the Email Outreach Playbook, and it's playbook.mailshake.com. And I promoted that. I got that on Product Hunt, and it's ungated. It's a completely free resource. And my goal was like, let's create the best resource that we can. And that took me like 6 months to make, but that was all while my co-founder was going and building the software. Right. So like, I recommend launching, or if you already have launched with something, that's best in class in terms of content. It's volume game is not going to get you anywhere with content. So be very deliberate. I call them content gaps. I think there's a site called contentgaps.com, which will give you a lot more information on this. But essentially like find the areas of where people are asking questions, or like go on Quora, go on Reddit, and find out like where is there a gap that people aren't covering. Right. So here's an example of not an ebook. I wrote an article for my personal blog, sujanpatel.com, on what is it called? Customer persona question. So there's all of this content on like the why you should build customer personas template. Like HubSpot has this awesome like 50-page template. But everyone was like kind of high in the sky, pie in the sky, like big picture things. And I was like, well, what do I ask my customers? What do I ask these people? So I just listed out 150 questions. So that's a very, very specific piece of content, because what I saw in the search results and what I saw in the industry was that like no one really said like what you actually should ask these people, because that's where I got stuck too. But so find out the content gaps, and that's really small. But you start with that one, and then you start with another piece and another piece and another piece. But what I recommend is find one or two angles you can play off of and go all in on those. The other thing is, if you don't have resources for creating an ebook and things like that, start with a blog post and keep expanding. That ebook I'm talking about actually started off as a blog post from my personal website. And I kind of took that and I was like, how can we expand this? So like, you can always do that. So like when you lay out the groundwork and content gaps and blog posts, those are kind of potential groundwork for future ebooks in the coming months, years, whatever.
That's very interesting. And so now you have this great piece of content. It's exactly the way that you want it to be. You put it out there in the public in order to download it. You get 40,000 emails, whatever it may be. How difficult is it to turn those people into customers? Again, you have the 40,000 emails, and now you have to try and direct them to the funnel in order to actually buy. Do you have any advice or techniques in order to get them to move through that process quicker?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's two or three things I want to share. One is getting your email list, your audience, whoever you can get to subscribe involved in the journey. People love being involved in the making of something. People love grand visions, right? So one of the first things I did was like, hey, we're launching this tool. And on the landing page, we put this big grand mission. We're going to be the best content marketing tool out there, whatever, with an email opt-in for people to go opt-in again on that thing. So we just kind of gave everybody, we shared everybody the story as we were building it, weekly communication. And then what we did was, you know, a month before launch, or like even, you know, even you can do this months before launch. It's like, hey, you want to get early access to this, pay me now, right? So test out getting your audience, your email list to buy from you. A lot of people kind of shy away from trying to ask your people to do stuff, but like your email list, no one's running a charity here, right? We're not here to talk about running a charity. We're talking about being an entrepreneur, and in order to be successful, you need customers. So get your email list and ask them early on, like, hey, jump in on this. So what we did is that we, you know, a month or two before we were ready to launch, like when we felt comfortable with the UX, we started making these kind of walkthrough videos. We designed it in InVision app and essentially made a clickable mock-up. And I was like, hey, here's what it's going to look like. We're going to give you 75% off. But the catch is you have to buy for a year package, which was, it was like, it ended up being like $100 that you had to put down. And we ended up getting like 25 people involved in that. And a lot of those were my friends or people who wanted to support me, right? Those influencers or people I built relationships with, I asked them like, hey, look, here's what we're doing. Can you help, right? So like ask for help from the people you have helped and people relationships you have. When you share the journey, you're not being promotional. You're sharing the journey, and it's a struggle. It's always going to be a struggle, and that's the underdog story. And it's a whole lot of fun. People can like feel like they're a part of it. Like I was an early customer. Like, you know, people can feel honored to say that. And you know, fast forward, you know, from 2015 to now, I still get emails from people like, hey, I was your early customer. I don't know if you remember me. But, you know, we bought into that $100 thing, and I'm like, what can I help you with? Like, I will do whatever it takes for those guys, right? So treat those guys as people who gave you $100 when you didn't have anything, as like your saving grace. So, but it's all about getting your first 100 customers. In fact, I split things up into not revenue. I look at it into like ones and zeros. So it's all about getting your first 10 customers and your 10. You should be able to get your 10 customers from your friends, maybe your family, or people who you know. If you cannot get your friends to buy something from you, if they won't buy your product, you either don't have enough friends in the industry, which is generally not the case, or you have a crappy product or idea that even your friends won't support, right? Or maybe you have really bad friends, so go make new friends. But you should get your first 10 customers. Then it goes from 10 to 100. This is your audience. This is where most people fail. Like this is, I think, like where startups go or SaaS businesses go kind of downhill. And then it goes 100 to 1,000. This is where like real marketing kind of comes in play. And it's a lot of elbow grease. You still don't need to worry about scalable channels. And then from 1,000 to 10,000 is really where, like, I call that big boy. You have to put your big boy pants on and really have to think about like, what are marketing channels that can help me get these customers? But too many people think about like, oh, I'm going to invest in content marketing. I'm going to do this and that. And yeah, that'd be great when you go from 1,000 to 10,000. But what about from 10 to 100? What about 1 to 10? And so break those things down, because if you're at 20 customers, it doesn't matter what happens when you get to 1,000.
Yeah, no, that's incredible advice. And so I definitely appreciate everything that you just said. I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. I'm curious to hear, throughout this journey, you've accomplished so much. You have 7 startups or 7 SaaS businesses. Is there anyone in particular that you would love to meet to further your business mind, your business acumen, and why would you want to meet them?
Yeah, I probably would want to meet probably like Warren Buffett, mainly because he also has, you know, not necessarily, he's a manager of lots of businesses, but he also runs and owns a lot of businesses, right? He's got a lot of kind of balls in the air, essentially, and he's done it you know, he's a million times ahead of me. And so, you know, one of the things I like about him is that there's no showboatiness to it. Built wealth. And I think a lot of people, a lot of business and entrepreneurs, business owners and entrepreneurs, they're really like focused on revenue and profit, but wealth, meaning you save that money, you're able to use that savings or money or bank account to go buy other things that can make you more money. And I don't know anyone better than Warren Buffett, who's done that successfully.
Yeah, very true. To change the mindset just for a quick second from business to personal, are there any habits that help you become more efficient throughout your day?
Yeah. So, you know, my day is every day is a different kind of hurdle, or there's different things going on. But, you know, a couple things I do. One, I try to start my days as early as I can. I find that I get most of my productive work done before and after work hours. So I know this. So during the work hours, it's more for my team. I'm there more for my team to kind of help them get unstuck, brainstorm. I have, you know, typically calls, some with other entrepreneurs, maybe some podcasts, what have you, but not that productive in my day, but I am in my morning. So before I hit the office, I actually already have accomplished the biggest thing I needed to accomplish for the day. And I typically work in threes. So every day I have three things I set myself to do. And it's not huge. I use the app called Things, and literally it's like, okay, what are the three things I'm going to do? And not saying like, oh, like, run payroll, or like go do this, go have, you know, work on this spreadsheet. I'm talking about what are big things that are going to help me move the needle, right? What are the things I can do that no one else can do, that my team can do? And those are the things I try to knock out. And I try to get one before I go to the office, because I know if I get one, I feel good. I feel like I got the momentum built up. I'm like, even if I'm busy during the day, I can knock out those other two. And it's the biggest thing. It's like, I think it's like eat that frog or eat the frog, like, you know, or the one thing. I think that's a book, or those are both books, but very much focus on that. The other thing is, and this is something that's helped me really, really drastically improve my productivity and kind of my sanity, is I'm really bad. Like everyone says, like, say no more often, say no to things. I'm like, I try to say no. And sometimes there's just good opportunities. Like I just said yes to one of my friends, Ty, at AppQs to do a webinar on onboarding. I don't have a webinar on onboarding. User onboarding. I love talking about this, but like, I don't have one on this. So, I probably shouldn't have said yes, but like, and I like supporting my friends or people, but, things just start to stack up no matter how productive I get, or like how, like, you know, how many people I hire and I clean out my task, I end up getting more on my plate. And it's because I'm leveling up to the next levels. Every 6 months I do this thing called the Purge. And have you seen the movie The Purge? It's this really bad, like,
I haven't seen it, but I know the concept.
Yeah, you get the concept, right? You kill people once a year, and it's legal. So I don't kill people, but I kill my to-do list. I kill the things and responsibilities I have. So throughout the 6 months, I go and add. I make a list. I have this Evernote doc of like, what are the things I'm working on? Oh, I do like three webinars a month. I'm doing more talking, speaking engagements. I'm doing podcasts. I have to write. I'm doing too much writing. I'm writing 7 blog posts, and I write down like the places I'm writing, everything I'm doing, pretty much. Like I made a list. It's like, I'm running payroll. Like, why the hell am I running payroll? Why the hell am I sending invoices? So I hired a bookkeeper, an accountant, you know, stuff like that. So, I go through that list one Saturday or Sunday every 6 months, and I'm like, okay, what's not moving the needle for me, right? So what's something, first and foremost, what's moving the needle? What's not moving the needle? Second, what's moving the needle that I don't need to do, right? And so, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was taking forever to write content, but I was like, why is it taking so long? So what's my process? I broke down the process during this purge day, and I was like, okay, I'm coming up with the ideas, I'm writing the content, I'm editing it, I'm adding links, and like I'm spending a lot of time researching stuff. So I was like, okay, let's get the team involved in ideation. I'll still write it. Let's get the team involved in research. I should not edit. Grammar is not my strength. And so I hired an editor. I hired a research person, he's a college student. Their sole job is to, like, when we come up with an idea, they find relevant information that would make sense to be included in this article. And it's just like 10, 15 links or like interesting stats. That cut my process from taking 3, 4 hours to create one article to 45 minutes because I only come in and write and that's it. And then, you know, it gets edited. I review it at the end. That's another 15 minutes, but like 1 hour. I'm talking 2,000-3,000 word blog posts. So little things like that, that has helped me carve out so much time in my day. And it also forces me to look at, like, is this thing I'm doing actually impactful, right? Is this going to help me hit my goals? And most of the time, I weed out like 80% of my task. And then 6 months later, more crap just piles on because I said yes to a lot of things. I cut that out every 6 months.
Well, I appreciate you not cutting me out. That means a lot. And we're just about approaching our time. But if you could just kind of summarize, and this is my favorite question. And so the Blind Entrepreneur was created for individuals who are blind in business. They're creating content and they're just not seeing the results and they don't understand why, whatever it may be. What are just quickly three pieces of advice that you would give to a fellow entrepreneur that is currently blind in business?
Yeah. So first and foremost, like, go meditate, ponder, take walks, whatever you need to do to figure out what your goal is from being an entrepreneur. And don't worry about the answer. If it's money, it's okay. Like, my number is money. I'm very money oriented. I like helping people and all this other stuff, but like if that didn't make me money, it wouldn't matter. So what's your number? And think about the next time you take a walk, whatever, how can you hit that number? And if you can't figure that out and back into that, make a smaller number and pull forward the time frame. So that's advice number one. Advice number two is don't overcomplicate things. When you're first starting off, or even if you've been around for 5 years or 10 years, you've been doing this for a while, think about what is mission critical that you do to the business and make a job description of what you do. Figure out what that is. And number three is I recommend hiring a virtual assistant, executive assistant, an admin person to do those the grunt work, the scuff work, the things that need to be done for a business, because frankly that is very, very important in running a business, but it can bring you down because the minutia of a day doesn't help you hit your vision, doesn't help you hit your goal. So, but it still needs to be done.
Very cool. Well, Sujan, you have successfully completed the podcast. So congratulations to you, good sir.
Thank you.
Without further ado, go ahead and tell everybody how they can learn more about you, how they could be a part of your journey and potentially become a customer of yours.
Yeah. So the best place to kind of follow along is my personal website, sujanpatel.com. My philosophy in life is I share everything I know. So if you have any questions, shoot me an email. All I ask is be very, very specific. And definitely check out my YouTube channel. Just Google my name or go to YouTube and put my name in. That's probably the fastest way to get there. I'm creating a video a week on just sharing everything I know in 5-minute chunks.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys for always liking, commenting, and subscribing. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and head over to theblindentrepreneur.com for more interviews. Being blind in business is temporary, and I hope after listening to the wisdom of Sujan, you are now able to see more clearly. Go out there and execute your vision. Thank you so much for watching this video. Don't forget to follow me on any and all social media platforms using the long last name above, followed by the letter J. If you want to get lost into the dark abyss of YouTube, click either left or right for another video. And finally, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. No, seriously, don't forget.